From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, 7 seasons for Veep and 12 for The Big Bang Theory. Both shows came to an end this week. Next up, Game of Thrones. So what makes for a good series finale? And we have a conversation and performance with the singing duo Nancy and Beth, actors Megan Mullally and Stephanie Hunt. They share how they form their musical act and what makes them click.
I think the timbre of our voices goes really well together.
You can hear from our annoying speaking voices that might be the case. Yeah, we also have a kind of a psychic twinship.
All that coming up on The Frame. A deeply devoted fan base is usually a pretty good thing for a TV show, except maybe when the final season rolls around and the likelihood of disappointing those fans goes way, way up. In fact, right now, more than 875,000 Game of Thrones followers have signed a petition asking that the final season be remade with competent writers. But Game of Thrones is not the only series that's reaching its end. Yesterday, the CBS sitcom The Big Bang Theory wrapped after 12 seasons. Last Sunday was curtains for the beloved HBO series Veep. To talk about what makes for a satisfying series finale, we called up CNN media critic Brian Lowry, and he started off with one of his favorites.
I think Breaking Bad really was a top-notch finale. I think they built up to it at about the right pace. I think that there was a payoff to it. There was finality. It didn't completely tie up every loose end, but it gave you closure. It brought the story to an end that felt organic to the series and was satisfying.
Is it done? Is he gone?
Yeah, it's done. He's gone. They're all gone.
On the other end of the spectrum, I would say something like Dexter, which just sort of pulled something out of its ear and ended up with something that I thought was extremely unsatisfying. And, you know, in terms of things that are memorable to me, I think the Six Feet Under finale is kind of a classic in terms of they did a flash forward that sort of showed where every character ended up. As for something that was just tremendously unexpected, the Newhart finale, which had the character wake up and be back in his old show and think it was all a dream.
All right, Bob. What is it?
Well, I was an innkeeper in this crazy little town in Vermont.
That took something which wasn't necessarily a show that lent itself to something really inventive and did something really inventive with it.
It's hard to think of a show on broadcast, cable, any medium right now that has the loyal attention that Game of Thrones has right now. And I'm wondering, when you think about shows that have come to an end in recent memory, is there anything that really matches Game of Thrones in terms of its scope and scale and how much people are investing in this last episode?
Well, I think the scope and scale part is absolutely true. I think that if you're looking for something that's analogous on that level, I think that The Sopranos in 2007 probably was along those lines. I also think the Lost finale is probably a pretty good template for this, especially in the sense that it built up towards some sort of resolution. Like Game of Thrones, I think one of the reasons you've seen this sort of blowback against Game of Thrones is people have had years to sort of envision how they see this plot going. And as it's gone in directions some of them didn't anticipate or that doesn't feel organic to them, they've gotten angry about it. So you sort of feel like I've invested all this time and I'm going to have thrown it away. In a way, that was the way I felt about the Lost finale. I felt like that I got to the end of the journey and they didn't really have a payoff for me. But you're absolutely right. This is a rare show where the amount of passion, I mean, in a way, this almost is more analogous to me to the reaction that greeted Star Wars The Last Jedi or something like that.
I remember, I think it was Larry Gelbart said, when MASH went off the air, it was still a very popular show, but they felt they had run out of stories. And it does feel like things these days are extended way past their sell-by date, that even though Veep, Big Bang Theory, and other shows are going off the air, it does feel like things don't end as often as they used to.
That's true. I mean, there is a real look. You know, if CBS had had its druthers, they would have renewed Big Bang Theory for another year. They've talked about that recently, and it was just that Jim Parsons, who stars in the show, didn't want to do it anymore. And, you know, in such a dispersed, diluted age, people hang on to the things that are working as long as they can. On the flip side, I think one thing that sort of started with Lost and that you've seen over the last few years is saying, okay, the show is going to end a year from now or 2 years from now, and we're going to give the writers the latitude to build up to the ending they want to tell. At least, you know, with Game of Thrones, for better or ill, they knew they had 2 seasons and 13 episodes to finish the series, and that's what they've tried to do.
You say that Lost and Game of Thrones both knew well before they were going off the air that they had time to figure out how they're going to end the show. And I guess the same is true for Empire next season. Is it often an advantage that you get to think that far in advance and try to figure out how you're going to tie things up as opposed to being forced kind of at a last-minute cancellation to do the same?
Yeah, I mean, I think historically networks didn't really care. You know, there was a part of network programming which was we do a show till it's over and then it's over. And I think as shows have gotten more complicated and more ambitious and the storytelling more serialized, they've really realized that it's just kind of bad customer service to tell a story of this, you know, scope and dimension with all of these avenues to it and then just shut it off. So I think, you know, it's been progress from a viewing standpoint, whether you like some of these finales or not, that you get a build-up and an actual ending as opposed to, you know, oh, by the way, this is the last episode. I wouldn't, though, frankly, envy Empire, just given the circumstances surrounding Jussie Smollett and the fact that they're going to come back into the next season without him and having to explain his absence. You know, they sent him off on his honeymoon at the end of the just concluded season. I don't think the honeymoon can last through the whole season.
Maybe he went to the island where Lost was set.
Yeah, that's right. If the numbers show up in Empire, we'll know what happened.
Brian Lowry is the media critic for CNN. Brian, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Coming up, actresses Megan Mullally and Stephanie Hunt are also singers. They have a duo called Nancy and Beth, and if you stick around, you're going to hear them sing. And now, actresses Megan Mullally and Stephanie Hunt combine their love of song and dance with their band, Nancy and Beth.
Please, Mr. Jailer, won't you let my man go free?
Mullally and Hunt met in 2011 on the set of the Nick Offerman film Somebody Up There Likes Me. Mullally, who is married to Offerman, quickly bonded with Hunt over their shared sense of humor and love of music. They released their first album in 2017. Nancy and Beth came to KPCC recently for a live event hosted by The Frame and KPCC's in-person team. And they brought along their great band, Roy Williams, Andrew Pressman, Joe Berardi, Daughtry Bean, and Petra Hayden. Nancy and Beth's musical style is self-described as punk vaudeville. Mullally and Hunt perform an eclectic assortment of cover songs, everything from Dinah Washington to Gucci Mane, and they also perform some complicated and hilarious choreography. Now let's revisit our conversation with Mullally and Hunt, starting with how they first met.
There are a lot of things that start in a pickup truck in Texas.
Interesting. Oh. Tell us more, John.
Yeah, what happened to you?
Sounds very
revealing.
For the
sake of this conversation, something happened between the two of you musically in a pickup truck in Texas. Do I have that part of the story right?
You do.
Yeah.
There was also a ukulele involved.
Okay.
There was.
So
as there so often is. We were both working on an indie film. Stephanie was like really in the movie, and I was just like cameo role because my husband was the lead. So I met Stephanie. I'd never been to Austin. I was going to be there for a couple weeks. She said, should I show you around town? I said, may we? And she did. And we got to be friends right away.
Sympathetic.
And then Stephanie said, had been telling me that she writes songs and plays the ukulele. And I said, ooh, I want to hear. So It was 115 that day in Austin.
It's pretty hot.
Which is kind of the average temperature for Austin. And so we sat in my rental car and turned on the air conditioning, and she was going to play a song, and she said, oh, but wait, there's this one part that I want you to sing with me. Mm-hmm. And the minute we heard our voices together, we sort of got that, we sort of froze with that wide-eyed...
Bushy tail.
Yeah, wide-eyed, bushy-tailed.
Meaning it was like a Reese's peanut butter cup moment that
yeah.
you didn't...
Yeah, that's very true. Butter. Yeah, it was.
That's a good mm-hmm. way to put
it. What was
it
about your harmonizing that you recognized was special?
I think the timbre of our voices goes really well together.
You can hear from our annoying speaking voices yeah. that might be the case.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, we also have a kind of a psychic twinship, so that helps.
That's good. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you about how you decide what you guys want to record. You've covered songs by Lou Rawls, Dinah Washington, Rufus Wainwright. Mm-hmm. Is there something that you recognize in a song that makes it a good fit? Do you try it out? Do you start singing it, do a different arrangement? How do you know when it's right?
Well, I think one of the main things is, and this is going to sound very elementary, but the songs have to have a good melody mm-hmm. and good lyrics, both at the same, concurrently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you really stop and think about it, yeah. a lot of songs either have one or the other, but not both, and sometimes neither. Mm-hmm. So we try to find both together. And then they have to be songs that we freak out over.
Mm-hmm. And then the final test is Megan's choreography that she does over them. Sometimes it doesn't, when you get to put them on their feet, they're not quite what you thought they would be, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Ones that were like, meh, and then we're like, okay.
Wait a minute.
Once the dance moves come in.
We're going to take a musical interlude now. So do you want to tell us what we're going to be hearing?
Strangely enough, our first song is Fine Brown Frame.
Wow.
Is the name of
coincidence?
It. How about that?
I think not.
Taking care of you. So we're going to do a song called Fine Brown Frame. It's a jazz song that I think I heard Shirley Horn.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll see some choreogs.
That the radio will not see.
Or ogs for short. I'm going to go like that.
Okay, I'm going to go like this.
Cute.
Oh, you got a fine brown frame. Baby, won't you tell me your name? Yes, darling, with me, 'cause all I can see is your fine brown frame.
Stephanie, I want to ask you about a show you're doing in 2012.
Okay.
You're opening for somebody that I think you know, Nick Offerman, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Look, you know
and
the history.
We do know
you
that.
You know him?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Is he here? Can we talk about him?
Yeah, he's out in the car. Oh, shoot, did I leave the windows open now? Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Somebody check.
He'll be fine.
You're doing a show, and I think something goes beyond what is planned. Tell us what happens that night and how it got us to maybe where we are today.
Wow. Oh, good setting up, John. Yeah, so Nick needed an opener, and Megan suggested me. This is the part two of our band formation story. And I asked Megan to sing along with me on the song that we had sung in the pickup truck in Texas. And we realized that it was even more fun on stage. And then started talking about other songs that we could do because he was workshopping the show, so it was like multiple times he needed the opener. Why would you not want to be singing with Meg? So then we just started one-upping ourselves. We're like, maybe we need a full band, not just this ukulele. But we started with just piano, I think, right?
Actually, Stephanie called a friend of ours, and she recommended Andrew and Daughtry, our bass player, who's now our band manager, and Daughtry, keyboard player, who is our life coach.
Yeah.
And
Really good at it.
So that, and then I had a previous band called Supreme Music Program, and Joe, the father of both of our children, right, was our drummer. So it all, and I knew Petra from her reputation as a musician extraordinaire, and then Stephanie knew Roy. So that's how it all, boom.
Stephanie, I'm going to ask a little bit about your upbringing, about music in your life. Okay. You have an Austin band, Ghost Songs. Your
yes.
sister, Phoebe, is a musician.
Yeah.
Right? What were you doing growing up, and how important was music to your family life, and when did you start playing professionally?
Well, I grew up in a musical household, so everybody played except for my mom, but she dances. She's a salsa dancer, so she made up for it. But my dad has a master's in classical guitar and was born and raised in New Orleans in all sorts of bands. So I grew up thinking that he wrote Yesterday, for example.
I love that he didn't correct you.
I know, I was like, my dad, he really feels things. And so, yeah, growing up, it was always like, he would throw us on stage for stuff, and also my sister would throw me on stage and ask me to sing harmony, so.
Megan, you were dancing with the Oklahoma City Ballet as a soloist, correct?
Yeah.
How did dancing evolve professionally for you, and at what point did you start doing music and acting? Was it concurrent with dancing, or did
it
one
was.
Lead to the other?
Yeah, it was. I probably started singing before dancing, because I was always singing along to every song on the radio, and my mom would buy me records, and my mom and dad had quite a good collection of Barbra Streisand and Judy Garland albums, so I have said that apparently my parents were a gay couple, like a gay male. I just didn't realize that at the time. And so I would sing along to those. Like, I'd put on one song, and I would sing it over and over and over, play it, keep playing it over and over until I could sing it just like the record. And that's kind of how I learned to sing. And so I always loved music, and I've always loved to kind of express myself through music and the dance. And those were the things that really had my heart. And I didn't start acting until quite a bit later in college. And, yeah, so that came last, actually.
What are your next couple of songs? Do you need to introduce them?
What do you guys want to hear? A PM Dawn song called Shake, or a gospel, like a spiritual, called Waiting for My Child. See, a show of hands for PM Dawn.
Wow.
That's okay. Like 10 people. Let's see. Let's see a show of hands for a spiritual called Waiting for My Child.
Oh, okay. Clearly.
Right.
Well, okay. It's just that it's early
for
life
me. Coach.
This is really early for me, believe it or not. It's like 1:30 in the afternoon. This might as well be 4 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
And so I'm a little nervioso about singing this
no,
song,
you've got
but I
this.
Think it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Coming up on The Frame, more with Megan Mullally and Stephanie Hunt, also known as the musical duo Nancy and Beth. Now, let's get back to my interview with Nancy and Beth, the alter ego musical duo of Megan Mullally and Stephanie Hunt. Their punk vaudeville act recently wowed audiences at a KPCC live event. We pick up the conversation with how they put together their crazy dance numbers.
First, we have a thing called the freakout list. So the song has to make it onto the freakout list. And then I'll look at that list and I'll just start thinking, like, what could it be that we haven't done yet? Like, what could it be conceptually? What could it be? What could the tone be? The style of the choreography? And sometimes I've had visions. I had one thing that came to me in a dream,
yeah,
which is really
woke up screaming.
Sounds sad. Yeah. Screaming with delight. Yeah. This Dinah Washington cover of Harbor Lights. I was like, oh my God. We'll do it in the dark with finger lights on our fingers. Like, I didn't even know finger lights existed. They do. And Yeah, so we do that, and that's one of our favorites. We can't do it. It doesn't work on the radio very well. But
I'd like to also add that then the final stage is that Megan basically just lets the spirit move through her, and I videotape it, and I try to remember the things, but it's a very serious, delicate process.
Yeah, basically, I come up with the steps, and Stephanie remembers them.
That's your notation.
It's literally how it works.
I want to ask you about your album, and I think you should unfold it so that everybody here can see the pictures inside.
I know there's a few people here who, I can tell already, will be maybe not as pleased. Oh, no, what happened? No money for wardrobe. We couldn't afford wardrobe. It was between the Will and Graces.
So for the radio, how would you describe what we're looking at?
Well, our first record is Stephanie and I naked against a plain backdrop, but a graphic that says Nancy and Beth covers the naughty bits. And it shows, interestingly enough, because this is not digitally manipulated anyway, that we're the exact same size.
Yeah.
Like all the proportions are the same, and we didn't even realize the day we shot this film.
Yeah. Anthropologically, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. It makes it really easy to buy costumes.
And how would you describe the personal satisfaction of performing live, doing music as opposed to acting, either in film, TV, theater? Is there a different reward for you as performers doing live music?
It's better.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Why is it the best thing?
There's something just joyful about vibrations, I think, in general. And music has this universal quality that you can reach people, and you can also just be in a little room and be happy about it. It doesn't require as much elaborate staging, even though we do elaborate staging now. But it doesn't require it. Music, you can do anywhere.
Yeah, and I think we're happy because when we do our shows, people really seem to like it.
So it feels like your musical partnership began very organically and almost randomly in this car when a hot Austin day.
We didn't have any schemes to start a band or do.
And then you do the show in front of Nick's thing that's kind of organic. So how do you make sure that you preserve that joy and that the fact that you weren't really planning on anything as you're touring, as you're maybe thinking about your next record? How do you make sure that you remember what it was that brought you together, even though there are certain things that you have to do as a band now?
Well, there's something about the chemistry between Stephanie and I. Stephanie is a very positive person, and I call her the human Xanax. She really calms me down. And then I bring things to her, whatever those are, panic. And but I think that, when we first started, before every show, we used to stand off stage with our mics and do this little White Stripes song.
Oh, yeah.
We could do it. It's 1 minute.
Sure.
We're sitting here. When you're in a little room and you're working on something good, but if it's really good, you're gonna need a bigger room. And when you're in a bigger room, you might not know what to do. You might have to think of how you got.
You might have to think of how you got started.
Sitting in your little room, da 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 do, da 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 do. That's sort of our mission statement.
Yeah, that's true.
We always feel like two little girls playing. It's that thing where, you know, that great thing where you don't realize the passage of time. And so that what that song is saying, which I'm sure you all got anyway, is just that, you know, when you have that childlike inspiration, if things start going a little better, don't lose that, because that's what made it good in the first place.
Megan and Stephanie, thanks so much for coming to the show.
Thank you so much. It was so fun.
Thank you.
Yay.
You can find Nancy and Beth's music on streaming services. And that is it for the week. The Frame is produced by Oscar Garza, Darby Maloney, Monica Bushman, Jonathan Shiflett, and Julia Paskin, with help this week from Emily Henderson. Andrea Gutierrez is our news clerk. Valentino Rivera is our engineer. Paul Ratliff is our intern. And I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. See you back here on Monday.